and welcome to the Weird Wiltshire Podcast with me, Will Shire. How are you all doing? Hopefully well. I just want to offer my utmost apologies for last week and not putting out a show. But unfortunately, things like that happen. Though the good news is I have taken steps to ensure that it doesn't happen again. So I won't waste any more time apologising to you, because you probably just want me to get on with it. So that's what I'll do. So episode 4, Bigfoot in Britain. I must say, I've always attributed Bigfoot as being an exclusively American cryptid. So you can imagine my surprise when I stumbled across numerous Bigfoot and Wildman reports from Britain. Then I was shocked even further when I found that there have actually been sightings in Wiltshire too. So, what's the difference between a Bigfoot and a wild man? Well, I'll tell you. In North American folklore, Bigfoot or Sasquatch are said to be hairy, upright walking, ape-like creatures that dwell in the wilderness and leave footprints. Depictions often portray them as a missing link between humans and human ancestors or other great apes. They are strongly associated with the Pacific Northwest, particularly Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia, and individuals claim to see the creatures across North America. A wild man of the woods, on the other hand, is a supposedly mythical creature that appears in the artwork and literature of medieval Europe, comparable to the satyr or faun type in classical mythology and to Sylvanus, which is the Roman god of the woodlands. The defining characteristic of the wild man is its wildness. From the 12th century, they were consistently depicted as being covered with hair. Images of wild men appear in the carved and painted roof bosses of Canterbury Cathedral. So I'm just going to go through some sightings that have happened in Wiltshire first, and then I'm going to go further afield. And the earliest encounter I could find in Wiltshire was from 1877 in Salisbury. And I'm just about to read an article which I found on Wiltshire OPC. It appears that a wild man, an uncouth, horrible-looking creature, who is supposed to dwell in the woods, has lately been seen in the neighbourhood of this district. On Wednesday he paid a visit to a farm in the occupation of Mr. Petworth. The wild man is described by those who have seen him to be so hideous in appearance that people flee at his approach. It so chanced, however, that the farmer's wife and daughter did not observe the beastly man until he had caught Mrs. Petworth in his grasp, apparently for the purpose of bearing her off. The daughter flew to protect her mother, whereupon she received a blow from the club of the wild man which rendered her senseless. The piercing shrieks of the mother and daughter alarmed the neighbours, however. Mr. Jarvis, a friend of the Petworths, hastened towards the spot from whence the cries were heard. He carried in his hand a gun loaded with duckshot, and upon observing Mrs. Petworth in the arms of her ruffian assailant, he levelled the gun, but hesitated, being afraid of discharging its contents, lest he should injure his friend's wife. "Fire, fire, Mr. Jarvis! Never mind me! Fire, for mercy's sake!" He no longer hesitated. A flash and a loud report followed, and the wild man dropped his burden, and, roaring with pain, was about to attack Mrs. Jarvis with his club. But upon the latter once more levelling his gun, the wild man fled precipitately. From the amount of blood found near the spot, it is surmised that he is very seriously wounded. Search has been made for him, but as yet, no one has been able to discover his lurking place. I just absolutely love how the written word is from this era, and English sounds so much better than what it does today, and I really enjoyed reading that one, as you could probably tell. So the next one is also from Salisbury, and this sighting happened in 2002, in September. George Price reported something which had lived in his mind, as clear as day, ever since. It happened in September 2002 when he was serving in the army. We were on exercises on Salisbury Plain. I was a commander in the turret of our tank, and we were advancing to contact our warriors. I was scanning the landscape when I turned to my 5 o'clock and looked right at a large ape-like figure. It looked scared because of the noise from all of the engines and tanks that were moving at speed all around. I couldn't believe my eyes, so I punched my gunner to look at it because he couldn't hear me over the engine. We both saw it run into nearby prickly shrubs. Its fur was similar to an orangutan in colour and the length and flow of it. Its face looked black or darkish, but I couldn't see its facial features, being on too high of an angle above it. It was more its gait, the way it moved. It was very fast and seemed to run with large strides. Its height was impressive too. It must have been 6 foot plus, but it seemed to run with its back low, i.e. bent over. It was an amazing sight to see it disappear into the shrubs. I kept staring at the spot as my tank was moving away, but it never emerged again, as if there was a hole below the bush it dived into. I observed the area at a distance for a while via the tank's optics, but nothing else was seen. It must have been terrified to move with half the British Army tearing Salisbury Plain up. I told my superiors as soon as we stopped, but the incident was laughed off, so I never mentioned it much after that. I did ask my gunner about it, and he said he had seen it, but not well enough to describe it. It has bothered me to this day, and I wish I had stopped to see it now. It was right next to me. This next one is also from Salisbury, so I'm guessing Salisbury is a bit of a hotspot for these sightings in Wiltshire. I was out riding in Groveley Woods, Salisbury. It was just about getting dark, so I would say around dusk. I was on the horse and my mum was walking along beside me. About 50 metres ahead of us, there was a very tall, large, dark figure. I thought it was too big to be a person, around perhaps 2.5 to 3 metres tall, though we were relatively far away. But like I said, he was around 50 metres away, perhaps a bit less, so I am not entirely sure. But he looked much bigger than a human male. And when this creature moved, it was in a non-human way. It moved with speed that was incredibly inhuman-like, and it moved with a sort of loping stride. When we were at the spot where I'd seen it run off, I noticed that there was no way a human could have escaped that fast, especially through the trees and scrub, since it was quite thick in there. Unfortunately, I did not have time to investigate any further, since my mum was a little freaked out and wanted to get away from the area. She had told me earlier on the ride that she had found half a deer when she was out a few days ago. She said it had been ripped to shreds, although thankfully it was gone when we were at the part of the woods where she had found it. From what I saw, I would say I think what I saw was a Bigfoot creature. But would a Bigfoot go for something like a deer? The strange thing is, my horse didn't spook, which is very strange, since he is generally quite a nervous animal. Could this still have been a Bigfoot if my horse didn't react? This next story is about the Beast of Brass Knocker Hill. In July of 1979, Ron and Betty Harper discovered that the bark had been ripped off of their old oak tree by an animal with teeth at least 20 times larger than the squirrels that usually inhabited the region. They also noticed that the area, which was usually alive with birds and small wildlife, had become mysteriously barren. By August 1st, over 50 trees had been stripped of their branches in the area. The creature allegedly responsible for the tree mangling and the sudden decline in the local fauna was finally seen by an eyewitness later that month. While some assumed that the culprit was just another ABC, alien big cat, according to the account, a man who preferred to remain anonymous was driving on a desolate stretch of road through Monkton Combe at night when he encountered a bear-like creature which was approximately 4 feet in length and bore two striking circular white rings around its eyes. The man presumably left the scene post-haste. In September 1979, the West Holland newspaper, Het Binnenhof, published a story about the bizarre beast with the headline Beest van Bath Lelagt Briet's Bos, which translates as Beast of Bath Destroys British Wood. The story reported that a creature was allegedly at large in Brass Knocker Hill, terrorizing the local populace and devouring the trees in the forest with its Dracula-like teeth. During the next year, additional eyewitnesses came forward and described the still unclassified animal as everything from a gibbon to a lemur to a baboon. 81-year-old Brass Knocker Hill resident Frank Green became so concerned he began a shotgun vigil. "I am very fond of some animals, but I reckon this creature could be dangerous, and I am taking no chances." The following summer, a police officer, Inspector Michael Price, claimed to have caught a glimpse of an animal, which he identified as a chimpanzee. Sadly, he was unable to capture the beast. Although Price was unable to explain how the descriptions of this unusual creature, including strange ocular markings, lumbering, bear-like body, and unusually large predatory teeth, were anything like what he saw, "we were sure this mystery creature would turn out to be a monkey of some sort. After all, men from Mars aren't hairy, are they?" It's never been confirmed what this creature was. Obviously, there are a few conflicting eyewitness reports. But after the sighting by Michael Price, it doesn't appear to have been seen again. But the point is that some sort of creature was sighted by a few different people in the same area. Some people have speculated that it might have been a type of panda. But as I say, it's never been confirmed what it was. The next few sightings come to us from Bristol. A Bristol resident says he witnessed an ape-like creature as it ate a piece of food with what he believes may have been improvised eating utensils. 58-year-old Harry, a retired man from Somerset, said that he was walking through the Lee Woods Nature Reserve on August 17, 2015, when the strange event took place. "I usually take my dog, but lately I have avoided taking her there because she has been getting very skittish for some unknown reason. As I was walking along, I suddenly began hearing noises as if someone was snapping twigs and making squeaky sounds. I thought it may have been a deer off in the brush, so I went off the path to look. This is when I saw this strange ape creature. It was sitting in the brambles, digging in the earth with a twig. It did this for about 5 minutes and then picked something up and began eating it." Harry believes this was a piece of raw meat. "Then it took another twig and used it to pick pieces of meat from between its teeth." But Harry was also aware that the strange-looking being appeared to be communicating with something. "It kept looking left and was talking to something off in the trees that I couldn't see, and I thought I heard movement from where it kept looking. When I say talk, it more grunted and squeaked. At one point, it started doing something with the twigs, crossing them over on top of each other. Like it was weaving something. All in all, I watched this thing for 25 minutes. It was only when it stood up and walked off that I got up and also left. When it stood, it grabbed a large tree branch and snapped it off quite easily, and then leaned it against another tree. It then walked off and I never saw it again." Harry says he was about 200 yards away and managed to discern the physical features of the creature. "When it stood up, I'd say it was about 6 feet tall. It was old looking and it had grey skin. I could see that it had human features, but its face looked more ape-like with a broader nose and cheeks and a jaw that jutted out and looked like it was curved. It looked like a prehistoric man from Land That Time Forgot, the old Doug McClure film. It was covered in grey hair which had black streaks in it. Mostly grey though," said Harry. Also adding that it had also had what appeared to be small breasts, but that it looked like a male because there was something in the crotch area. So that would be a Bigfoot with a dad bod. Gotta rock that dad bod. The man explains that even though he was confused about what he was witnessing, he is sure that it wasn't an animal. It wasn't a horse or dog or anything like this. It was like an ape man. It was like a man living wild, like a Neanderthal or something similar. I have heard of Bigfoot, but it wasn't like one of those, like the giant wrestler type of thing. Harry claims he was not scared or worried because the creature seemed friendly, although he adds it didn't get a chance to see him. Lee Woods has had a reputation for being haunted for some time. Years ago, tramps lived in the woods favouring the Abbot's Lee end and avoiding the Lee Woods part because of its evil reputation. It was said that loud screams could be heard in the night. Next up, we have an experience from Bury St Edmunds. Jeff Knights was looking for big cat signs in the Ofton Woods near Stowmarket when a creature showed up on August 14th. I have seen one big cat and several pug marks, which are animal footprints, too. When he began hearing primate vocalizations and crashing sounds coming from the thick vegetation, I heard it as clear as day, a monkey going woo, woo, over and over, and then I turned and I saw it. Mr. Knights reports that he saw an animal matching the physical features of a gorilla mixed with the general shape of a man. It was a similar colour to a chimp, he explained. It walked fast with its legs like ours, and not like a chimp would walk. It knocked branches aside as it went along with its arms. They looked to be at least a third longer. It was probably 5'8" tall. The creature, he says, then disappeared back into the woods. I became very panicky. Now I am 20 stone and pretty fearless, but I just needed to go. Knights says he is very confused with what he saw, but that he is sure about what it looked like, although he is reluctant to call it a shug monkey, which is an old English name that covers anything from a black shuck to a monkey-faced bear. I keep running things through my head. This is England, not the Pacific Northwest. The only other answer could be an escaped bipedal, an ape, monkey, or a gibbon, but it didn't look like any of them. Mr. Knights added that he also wondered if it could be a man-made hybrid ape. Well, I guess we will never know. Next we go right up top to Scotland for the next encounter. Clavercarn's region of Scotland is where the big ginger Ra, who is 7 foot tall and hairy all over, emptied poachers' nets on a regular basis. In fact, it happened so much the poachers found other fishing waters. One of the people who lives there stated that he had seen the big hairy man walking along the railway line in a southerly direction, from the forestry behind his croft towards the viaduct / cairns, on quite a few occasions, but couldn't be pinned down to an exact number of times. He also said his dogs were going nuts each time. Also with the witness was another man, a male from the area of Nairn Valley and Clavercarns, who is out in the fields late at night and early morning. He says he has seen something moving he could not explain 3 or 4 times now. The first time he was out in the fields and heard someone coming along the riverbank, so he dived for cover. As it passed him, it appeared to be enormous both in height and width and stank to high heaven. His best view was one night when he had his nets out on the river and had walked away downstream. When he came back about 30 minutes later, he said the bloody great hairy thing was taking the fish from my net. He yelled at it and it stood up, turned complete with fish and walked off into the trees. It wasn't in any hurry. A researcher asked the witness for a height estimate, and as he is 6'3", he thinks the thing was around 7 foot and broader than himself. He has also seen the creature on other occasions on the opposite bank of the river, but not within 30 feet, and it tried to hide in the tree/bush line. He also mentioned in the passing that his brother has seen the same figure across the actual battlefield at Culloden. Another report from a person living along the river is that the big ginger Ra walks past the cottage door to get onto the railway line. We are so used to it now, we just close the door at dawn and dusk and leave them to it. Another one now, just from up the road in Bristol. A witness was on a train to Bristol Temple Meads, which was approaching the city, when he saw a massive creature taking huge strides along a hedgerow. About 10 miles from Bristol, we were travelling through an area, and in fields to my right, I saw something large in the middle of the field walking. It was walking kind of hunched over, and all I could tell you was it was a black figure. At a guess, I would have said it was 70 to 100 metres away from the train. My eyes were glued on it at this point. I was watching the way the thing was walking, almost towards the side of the field. It was edged right up to the hedgerow as if to walk alongside the hedge itself, almost like it was using the hedge for cover. A quick glance by the man around the carriage revealed that nobody else had spotted the creature. I would imagine 5 to 10 seconds was all I saw it for, he said. I'm 100% sure what I saw was the English Bigfoot, and what makes me so confident is the way it walked, with slightly bent legs, long strides, but a graceful, fluid walking motion. So this next one is a fairly well-known incident within the Bigfoot community. It happened in 2003, and this is a news article. A Yeti with glowing eyes is living in a northeast park, according to a fisherman's tale. A report on a website dedicated to hunters of the Yeti and his Bigfoot buddy carries details of 3 encounters between the half-ape creature and 3 pals. They tell how they spend hours in Bolam Lake near Bowsey, Northumberland, pike fishing late at night. But their tranquility was disturbed on one fishing trip by a catch they did not expect to make. The anonymous writer tells how he was between his friends, Neil and Nathan, walking on a wooden path back to the car, just after midnight. About halfway along the path, I turned around to talk to Nathan. He was further back along the path, picking his bag up off the track. Behind him, standing in the middle of the track, was a dark figure. The light was moonlight and shining through the trees. The others did not see it at first until he pointed it out to them. He said it was a dark figure, looked about 8 foot tall, heavy built. Its eyes, or what seemed to be its eyes, glowed in the darkness. We ran top speed all the way back to the car. His friend Neil also reported seeing the figure in March last year at night on a hill close to the remains of an Iron Age settlement by the park boundary. He described the creature as dark brown in colour with huge muscular arms, and said that a few weeks later, while camping on the hill, he was woken at about 1 a.m. by a loud thud. He heard a growling sound and something rummaging in his bait box outside the tent. So, that last encounter was known as the Beast of Bolam. Researchers and media flocked to that area after this encounter, and there have been other types of experiences there as well, from ghosts to black-eyed kids, big cats. So a mixed bag, really. The next one is from the infamous Sherwood Forest, once home to Robin Hood. I was heading home to Cuckney from work, and I was driving along the Worksop Road. It was still light at about 4:50 p.m, and I saw 2 figures stood to the side of the road as you drive through the forest. They were stood just within the trees. I'm going to be honest and say their appearance really scared me. They were really tall and naked and looked like cavemen of some kind. The big one stood about 6.5 foot tall and was clearly a male. I could see his sexual parts. Ooh-er, missus. This male was covered in hair, which was brown in colour. It had no clothing on it at all, and they had something strange about their appearance. They had weird-shaped heads, like a deformed skull, very apish, almost like a chimp. But the face looked human too, very man-like. The other was much shorter, only about 3 foot tall, and had less hair on its body than the adult one. But the little one looked the same as the bigger one, just younger. A deformed head for a human, but still a human face within it. I don't know how to explain it. It's very hard to put into words. I don't know what I saw, but it is strange. What looked like father and son or an adult and child. Hair covered all over, and just standing there using the trees to hide at the side of the road. I wondered if they were just waiting to cross over, but how can these people hide when so many people visit this area? It just doesn't make sense. They looked for all the world like wild people, or how you would imagine we once looked. I am too scared to tell anyone in case they laugh. I can't bring myself to tell anyone else, and my husband wasn't keen on me reporting this. I was going to the police, but my husband says they will report me to the authorities under the Mental Health Act. From the same area in 1982, is this encounter. Author Nick Redfern describes how he received a phone call from a man claiming that he saw a large hairy hominid, which was approximately 7 to 8 foot tall, in the vicinity of Sherwood Forest around 1982. As he was in a couple, he wasn't the only witness, as his wife also saw this and confirmed the account. It was around 11 to 11:30 p.m. as they were driving their car along the Budby to Ollerton Road, and just before the Edwin Stowe turnoff, that he saw the hominid run out across the road. He thought at the time it may have been a prank, i.e. someone dressed up, and hasn't spoken publicly of it until this day. He didn't see a face, though he doubts it was human, as the thing moved too quickly to get a good look, though they didn't stay around to find out. So, could Bigfoot be in Britain? While reports of a hairy creature that walks on two legs are commonplace in North America, even seasoned Bigfoot experts have questioned whether the animal could exist in the British Isles. Nevertheless, hunters continue to scour the British countryside in bids to find Bigfoot. The British Bigfoot Sightings Group has around 2,000 online members. I tried to join this group, but it's either closed or it's now secret, so I'm unable to link it. But I think it is linked somehow to one of the websites in the sources in the notes. One leading British Bigfoot researcher, Deborah Hatswell, said it is possible a Bigfoot-like creature could still exist in Britain. In 2012, the government produced the National Ecosystem Assessment, and it showed that only between 6 and 8% of the land in Britain is actually built on. The rest is either forest, farmland, or wild mountains or downs. People who are open-minded about whether such a creature could exist in the vast forests of North America might think Britain is too built up, but it's actually not. When you look at the reports of sightings in this country, they tend to follow rivers and forests, she added. There have always been folklore stories about wild men living in the woods in this country. They date back centuries, and those stories have continued. So, that wraps up this topic. Bigfoot has always fascinated me, I think purely because there are sightings all over the world, and it's just the idea that a hominid species is possibly living in secret alongside us. I'm still on the fence when it comes to whether I think it is real or not. I mean, there is definitely a lot of evidence out there, but it just seems a bit surreal. That being said, if I saw one, I am sure there would be lots of people who would say the same to me. So, I guess the only way to solve it is to catch one and parade it around the country, P.T. Barnum style. And that swiftly brings us on to joke time. You didn't think I'd let you get away without slipping at least one joke in, did you? What is Bigfoot's favourite Jimi Hendrix song? All Along the Sasquatch Tower. Yes, my jokes are terrible, but I enjoy them, and that's all that matters. I have noticed that I have had some reviews over on my Facebook page, so it's only right that I show them some love and read them out. So the first review is from Jim from Northampton, and Jim says, "Great service, friendly and reliable, the best taxi service in Chichester." Thank you for that review, Jim. Not really sure what's gone on there, as I'm not a taxi service, nor have I ever been to Chichester, but I really appreciate your review anyway. Full disclosure here, I know Jim, and he's placed this review as an inside joke, so I say we should make the joke on him, and we should all go over to Jim's review and react to it so that he has lots of notifications to deal with. Sound like a plan? The other review is from across the pond, from a gentleman called Rich from Sandusky, Ohio, who shared the page along with this review. Great listen, should be a load of good stuff later. Much appreciated, Rich. I will endeavour to fulfil your prophecy on the upcoming content. I'm afraid I haven't had any more listener submissions, so instead I will share some more stories from Mumsnet. They have a lot of good stories over there, and I have been reading a mega thread there for some time now. As before, I'll give credit to the poster at the end of each story. My husband and I eloped to a foreign city to marry. A couple of close friends lived in said city. We stayed at their place and walked to the wedding venue. It was lovely, all very low-key, which was exactly what we wanted. They took a few photos on the walk there. We were well-dressed, but not wedding-y. An old man randomly stopped me, inquired about where we were going, and chatted on the pavement. It seemed important to him. He seemed wonderfully happy that we were getting married. He was ever such a lovely man. For some reason, chatting to him gave me a lovely warm glow, so much so that I took a close-up photo of his face, with his permission. That's always good. Always good to have permission when you're taking a close-up photo of someone's face. Weeks later, the hoo-ha over the elopement had died down, and we show the wedding photos to my family. My father is flicking through the album. All is well. Suddenly, he goes white as a sheet and holds up the page with the photo of the man and exclaims, "Why is there a photo of this man?" I looked confused and explain as per the above. And then I say, "What's wrong, Dad?" He tells me, "That man is the absolute double of your Uncle Bob." Uncle Bob is my father's much older brother, who was super lovely and who died when I was preteen. Credit to user When Shepherds Watched Strictly. Well, that one's a bit spooky, isn't it? In the 1960s, my husband was a Boy Scout and went away to a camp somewhere, a short while after his much-loved grandma had died. He couldn't swim at all. One day, they went on a walk and part of it was along a canal towpath. He was daydreaming. He's dyspraxic, so falls over a lot and goes off into a world of his own. And somehow he got detached from the others. Not looking where he was going, he suddenly found himself in the water, and although next to the edge, he was out of his depth. He was panicking, but just as he went under, he felt quite definitely a hand close round his wrist and drag him out onto the towpath. There was no one there and nowhere they could have hid or disappeared to out of view. That was from Joffrey Baratheon. My husband's grandmother told me this one. It was not long after she had gotten married, so it would have been in the 1950s. They had just moved into an old two-up, two-down in Leeds. She said she and her husband worked shifts at local factories. One night, she did a late shift and got home just before midnight. The house was in darkness and she went straight up to bed. She got in and cuddled up to her husband. He was lying on his side with his back to her asleep, and she said he was freezing, but the house was always freezing upstairs. About 6:30 she woke up when she felt him get into bed and thought he must have got up for a pee. She said something to him to that effect, don't know the exact words, and he said something like, "No, I've just come in." They knocked and said they needed an extra for the night shift, so I left you a note on the table. He had, in fact, left a note. She hadn't seen it because she had gone straight to bed. She said they never had anything else odd happen in the house after that, but she was terrified for months. And that was from LuluJakey1. When I lived in London in my early 20s, I encountered the same stranger in completely different places 3 times. Farringdon, Marylebone and Oxford Street. A month or two between each time. He was middle-aged, dressed in a black suit and bowler hat, and holding an umbrella, and he nodded politely and said, "I do like your boots," before walking on. I had knee-length, high-heeled boots I wore at the time. The first time I just said thanks, thinking he was a friendly eccentric. The second time I just gawped in amazement at seeing him and hearing the same words again, and the third time I panicked a bit. Was he following me, or was it complete bizarre coincidence? And that was from user DIY and Eat Cake. My dad died 21 years ago at the very young age of 48. He had his first heart attack at age 33 in 1978. So me and my siblings basically grew up with him being unwell, although in every other way he was fit and healthy. If you saw him, you wouldn't have thought he had been told by the doctors that he was on borrowed time and could drop dead watching the TV. The doctors had a lovely caring bedside manner in the 70s. He spent a lot of time in cardiac intensive care, and more than once my mum was told he wouldn't last through the night and to gather the family together, only for my dad to pull through. One night he came into my room and he told me about a dream he had had whilst in hospital, about being in a remote area of Scotland, and he saw some ruins with an archway. He felt a strong urge to walk through the archway and saw a cowled figure, like the Grim Reaper, beckoning him, and as he was walking towards it, he saw his grandmother and she was shouting at him to go back, and that it wasn't his time. My dad was actually crying when he told me this, and I know he wasn't given to flights of fancy. And why would anyone wake their 12 or 13 year old daughter up in the middle of the night to tell them something like that? He was obviously shook up about it and trying to work it out in his own mind. We did used to have fabulous conversations about life after death and near-death experiences. He had had them before, but this was the one that shook him up, as it was the most real. After he died, I mentioned it to my mum, and we worked out that the time he said he had the dream, he was actually in cardiac intensive care and had been very restless. His kidneys were failing and he wasn't allowed any liquids bar an ice cube wrapped in a muslin to wet his lips. And he was wired up to all sorts of machines, and in the middle of the night he flatlined. The nurses all came running in to find my dad sitting up, covered in blood, having pulled all his monitor pads off and pulled out a needle or pump that was going straight into his heart, and was trying to find his slippers so he could go home. My dad and I spoke a few times about this before he died, and he was of the mind that there really is something after we die, and he was convinced his grandmother met him to tell him to go back. Also, he asked that when he died, we place a penny in his hand for the ferryman. We ended up giving him a 2p piece, just in case he met another soul without the fare. My dad died at home very suddenly and peacefully when I was 19, and the next day, me and my sister were the only ones at home. My brother was abroad at this point. And whilst we were sat there in the quiet of the living room, we both heard my mum and dad's bed creak upstairs and the unmistakable sound of my dad coughing, followed by his footsteps going into the bathroom and the door slamming and locking. We both looked at each other and said, "Did you just hear what I've just heard?" And we had both heard the same thing. For the week after my dad died, I was too freaked out to walk up the stairs at home, as I could feel my dad's presence there. This upset me a lot, as I knew my dad would never scare me or harm me, but it was a very, very strong presence. The heavy feeling in the house only went after the funeral, and I am convinced he was there in the house until we had all said goodbye. I am convinced that my dad came to visit my daughter when she was a few months old. I was already pregnant with my second child and awoke one night for no reason. It was pitch black in the room, no outside light sources, and as I sat up in bed, I looked over to my daughter's cot that was right next to me. I looked over at her and she was sound asleep, and then realised the room was lit up when it shouldn't have been. I looked at the cot again and there was an orb the size of a tennis ball hovering above it. It was glowing with a weird phosphorescent light, and as I saw it, I knew it was my dad coming to see his firstborn grandchild. I said, "Dad, meet Cynthia. We love you and know you are still here." The orb then moved from above the cot and landed on my left shoulder, and then literally zoomed straight off through the wall. It actually left little sparks as it went. I sat there for a moment, trying to figure out if it was real, and then this feeling of peace and love just settled over me, and I just went back to sleep. It was a very surreal experience, but I know it did actually happen, and I do believe my dad came back to see his granddaughter. And that was by user Dr. Weeks Wages. Well, that's unfortunately the end of the show today. As always, if you've made it this far, thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review, liking or sharing my social media pages. The links are in the description. Don't forget, if you've had an experience from anywhere in the world that you want to share with me, feel free to send it to me at weirdwiltshirepodcast@gmail.com. That's weirdwiltshirepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want a shout out, don't forget to leave your name and or location. You can also contact me if you just want to give me some feedback, or even if you just want to say hello. This has been the Weird Wiltshire Podcast with me, Will Shire. Until next time. This episode was written and researched by Will Shire. Music created and provided for use by the very talented Coag Music. All content used is done so under fair use policy or Creative Commons.